That's the new confession.
Yeah, I think that I guess one of the things that I like about what we've done is how we've setting the early McLuhan in relation to the latter. So you set up all these basic problems, and then as you follow these themes through, McLuhan's quite mechanical in some respects, or quite logical, rigorously logical in terms of taking a very basic set of problems. I mean, as he said, like all first-rate minds are concerned with the issues of the soul. So he's saying, well, look, I'm interested in issues of the soul, and he's going to follow that through all the way through until the 70s and until he dies.
Yeah. And he's always talking about those issues, but the form of expression of it changes, and maybe even he changes because the expression changes him. Or the issues of concern.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that would be a new way of looking at how and why he keeps seeming to rediscover things in his work anew. Which we've often said is a function of his sickness or something like this, but there's, function of a big mind that's working really, really quickly, but there's also, it could be symptomatic of a transformation in his awareness.
Yeah, and thinking that he's actually rediscovering the chemical body after really studying the discarnate patterns and wandering around in the TV state, the TV body. He's actually jumping from body to body, and he rediscovers something that applies to one of the other bodies. Like, it's not repeated. It's repeated in a new context, and the new context is the environment. So he has to think, he gets an idea. He says, okay, how will that apply in the radio era? How would it apply in the TV era? How would it apply to the internet era? You know, he's juggling whole vistas.
Yes.
Which may be the way of what Pound was trying to do with the cantos and what Joyce was trying to do with Finney's Wake. He actually internalized their methods and then thought sociologically and culturally and media dynamic-wise, applying that juxtaposition technique. He actually was living in as a style of writing. And he had to juggle his own eras of himself, his own ERAS, his own phases.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. And I guess that becomes increasingly possible when you have lived a long life and you have had the blessing or curse of being able to think about these things for an extended period.
Yeah, and have modern media replaying things for you. Remember, you're living in a time of tape recordings and replay, instant replay, most profound metaphysical thing. It's not hard to forget. It's not hard to be reminded of a lot of stuff because it's replayed for you.
Yeah, it's. I've been thinking recently about some of the kids I encounter in my class and stuff like that. And it was like, so McLuhan's awareness, like he's talking about this, the rapid succession of massive media landscapes. But in a certain sense, all these kids that have been born in the 90s, they've, on one hand, they don't experience that succession of landscapes. There is the single resonant node, the digital,
which is tiny, and they're bigger than that. They're the exact opposite of the 20th century.
Yeah, but there's also, in a certain sense, while there's, while people seem to hoik up this idea that there's such massive radical change, in a certain sense, there isn't.
I was hearing some of this in my buzz tapes going through them. We're in the age of no change today, and there's nothing to be afraid of. You see, that's the kids do not deal with huge media environments. They got no environments. They're fucking totally. Are we still recording?
Yes.
Oh, okay. They've got these tiny little things that are harmless little useful devices that are fun. They're actually trying to find if there is a problem.
Yeah, exactly. In search of a problem.
Yeah, and they are all torn up because they can't find one. That's the problem.
Yeah, nostalgic for one, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess there's the inertia of that nostalgia for these great, grand problems that require heroic fortitude, and there's none on offer.
Yeah, and it's almost like they are looking. Yeah, they're looking. They can't handle the utopia they've been put into.
So, again, I guess it comes back to that issue of anti-environments. Anti-environments are that situation. Like, if in McLuhan's day, when there was actually a transition between forms, or you know, various forms of media, up until the collapse of those forms, how do you create an anti-environment in a situation where there is no collapse? There's no, everything's collapsed on everything.
Yeah.
That's an incredibly difficult issue.
Well, I'm working on that all the time.
Yeah.
I've thought of this. I mean, I've known about, noticed that the Android meme got smaller and smaller, got friendlier and friendlier, and got out of everybody's way. I've been talking about that for more than a decade. Now, okay, there's 2 points. That's why McLuhan's books are irrelevant. They actually don't, and Zingroni understood this. I talked to Zingroni about it. He says, you can't talk McLuhan's language. With the present world, there's no problem. He's trying to solve who killed Kennedy, and it got solved. And so, why would we read his attempt to solve who killed Kennedy? It got solved. You know what I mean? It's not relevant.
Yeah.
But what is interesting is I find that what Ion says is a new anti-environment. To say that every death is a suicide, that's a very radical thing. He's come up with most extreme statements. And, okay, so that I found that I've solved this problem with the appendage known as Ion. But before Ion, I thought that my five bodies is a better way to discuss these issues. I find that young people, when they hear the idea of the five bodies, they're fascinated by it. It means something to them. You're going to have to start teaching my stuff, Andrew, if you want to have a lively class.
Yeah, I already do, Bob. But,
do you mention that there's more than one body that they have?
Yeah, totally.
Good. How's it going? Do they find that not a problem or it doesn't work?
Oh, they've loved it. I've just had them do an audit of their ship bodies.
Very good. So you've actually been stealing my stuff. Very good. Okay. But no, really, that's to tell these kids that they have different bodies, which means things they can use or that are not a problem, so to speak, or not some external thing being imposed on them. They've grown these things that they didn't know they had. That is something useful and delightful for them to realize.
Yeah, there's definitely issues about I guess a tribal divide between those that seem to equate themselves with their chick bodies versus those that see it as just a puny little appendage which they attach to something else.
Right, but they might be interested in one of the other bodies.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what was very limiting about Eric's talk in Bologna. He's explaining how McLuhan did his thing, and what McLuhan did is irrelevant. There is something that McLuhan teaches that is relevant, but it can't be used in the way he talks about it. Like Zingroni admitted this. He says, I can't teach McLuhan. You can't talk about black and white TV or radio to kids. He said this in the 90s. To kids who've got all the latest CDs and whatever complex audio stereo equipment they had, and digital stuff, those technologies are not like what was written about in Understanding Media.
No, but there is, although in, I guess, what was formerly understood as cross-cultural communication, in terms of relating to other groups and times, it can still have some purchase.
Pretty
limited.
Probably thinking of it as an environment outside yourself doesn't work. Has to be considered organs. Which, the guys, Deleuze and Guattari, aren't they the ones who came up with the body without organs, organs?
Yep, yep.
They were starting to come up with new language. They knew McLuhan wasn't adequate enough. Couldn't use those terms.
Yep.
But they, because they didn't have a good understanding of McLuhan, they didn't get far.
So, assuming just in terms of just in your own work, when you're What were the other evolutionary strands that you didn't explore or go down in terms of your bid to create and provide an anti-environment?
I present the different strands, okay? You've got the LaRouche quadrant, the Thompson quadrant.
No. I mean, like, what were the failed evolutionary strands in terms of other directions your program could have taken?
The LaRouche quadrant is failure. That's why each one of them on the chart is a tragedy, Shakespearean tragedy.
Yep.
LaRouche is Macbeth. You know, take over the state apparatus. What Stalin would call a Stalinist view. You know, just think you take over the government, that'll do something, but that environment is not the power fulcrum anymore. So LaRouche, if I went the LaRouche way, it wouldn't work. If I went the McLuhan way, it wouldn't work. If I went the Thompson way, it wouldn't work. If I went the Croker way, it wouldn't work. Now, no, the tragedy of McLuhan, he's King Lear. The tragedy of Thompson, he's Othello. Croker is Hamlet, the paralysis of the postmodern. And then I put in my quadrant, my way, which is Henry V. That's a successful, you know, not a tragic Shakespeare play, and Prospero. Put Prospero and Henry V together. You get my success story. And I think, I really believe that Ion is the solution, is the breakthrough, because I didn't go the other routes. So my chart is the roads not taken. They were understood and explored, but not relied upon. So remember, the chart is a picture from the hexadic view. The hexad is not on the chart.
Yeah, because you're in there as content, and you're the author in that sense.
Yeah, I'm looking at how those other threads picked up aspects that I was implementing, and they developed them, and they didn't, and then they went down the wrong rabbit hole. But they are all necessary to get to the new thing. They have to be understood. It's almost like they're former ersatz anti-environments, and a rapid sequence of them, and they are important, just like radio was important, the TV era was important, the computer, and then the satellite squared. All important phases. And then there's the implosion of them in the seamless web, which is the Android meme, and then there's the post-Android meme.
Yeah.
And I think it's really great. I mean, I'm beginning to look at this MUM series as another part of Bob's play, Hand Signals for the Blind. Because we got, anybody who listens there is going to have to start wondering, who's that odd voice that shows up after 4 hours, says one word, and everybody panics? What the hell is that thing? You know what I mean? If they didn't know that it was Ion. It's hilarious what we have embedded in the later hours of the thing.
Yeah, I definitely salute the current format where he shows up later on in the piece. It's wild.
And he indicates he's been lurking for 3 hours.
And then all these other people burst in on the conversation all of a sudden. Now's the time. My friend, reading.
Yeah, and I liked your comment. Was it you who said, yeah, they're just all waiting for... Who commented on the INS are being quiet until we get over this McLuhan preamble? Was it you who said that?
Yeah.
That was brilliant. That's great. That's what's going on. They're just waiting to see if the hidden ground will show up. They know they have to. What is it? You have to look at the opening acts before the main act comes out. So we're the opening acts, right? You sit there and put up with it till the headliner shows up.
We're in there talking like possibly the greatest mind of the second half of the 20th century, and how he's offering a new physics and went beyond Einstein and this, that, and the other, and it's, oh, yeah, okay.
But, okay, so what... So you have him lurking. So when he shows up, everybody screams. And then if he knows it's right, he won't say anything. He didn't. He let Dave. And then we get this idea that someone died. Someone got interrupted by a funeral notice. And we ran off to talk about the history of the guy. He's absolutely hilarious. And the guy was available. You just call him up. He's right there, ready to go to work. He's playing everything. And Ion sits respectfully, says, oh, I guess I'm not in on this week. They got Dave. They don't need me this week. I'll just sit in the sidelines, right? And he's obedient. He doesn't say much.
I did love how Dave was totally nonplussed by the fact that you called in, and it wasn't just you, that there was just a whole legion, an audience that was in tow.
No, he's not. That's happened every time I've called him over the last year. There's been an audience, and I have to introduce everybody. I don't know what he was. If he was nonplussed, hey, listen. While just now, Mark Stallman just came online. The little button pops up. You know what is it? Six. It's 6 hours, so it's 1:30, 7:30. So it's 7:20 to 8. He gets online, and he would see that we're online, right? If he.
Well, it depends on his settings.
Okay, so now he might have been nonplussed by something, but I don't know if it was the fact that there was people there, unless he was. But I don't expect him to be, because every time we do it, we've got people. I mean, we called him up and put him on the radio 2 weeks ago. Called him up, and I said, can you come on the radio? He says, what? And in a couple hours? He says, no, in 2 minutes. He says, okay, sure. And then he's the featured guest, you know, and he has to perform, and he can do it. So maybe he was nonplussed by something else. You know what I mean? It's taking
You've explained it. I just didn't know the context of
Well, if you picked up that he was nonplussed, it may not have been for that reason. It might have been something else. It might have been the fact that Abaton died.
Yeah.
Look at the way he was treated. I mean, this is an old buddy. And Dave makes a few comments, and then we just go on and forget about him. I think he brings it back to Abaton. He wasn't affected by it too much, was he?
I didn't get the impression that he was.
No. It's almost like, he didn't want to go into the whole battle wounds that came from it, you know. But he wasn't bitter about it, just remained happy. And it's hilarious what goes on in the session today. After the great exploring, we then have a little interesting party.
Yep.
And then we go on to this. Bob's always on the go. talk.
Long day in the stables today, Bob.
There are a lot of people playing poker and bridge, and I had to fucking keep the rigorous art of conversation going because there are a lot of lazy people around me.
Well, and on that note, I'm going to call it a day. So thanks very much, Bob. And I'm just.
I like that. Keep that rigorous mouth going.
The rigorous mouth. that'll turn up on an album cover soon.
Yep, the rigorous mouth. From Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. The Dartmouth.